This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. We have two poets today premiering two first books, and we're going to hear poetry from them. And their names are Gail Bartlett and Jan Booth. And they've had brilliant careers before this, and all with language, which finally evolved into poetry. So first of all, Gail, let us hear your voice, and then we'll know a little bit about you with a poem.
Hi, Grace. The first poem I'm going to read is called Shut the Gate. Like all people who grew up on a farm, you learn not to welcome the uninvited guest, the groundhog, the buzzard, the coyote, the snake. In the night, you might suddenly be left alone. You know how to load the .22. Always the unexpected thing to bury. A calf can die in 40-degree rain. A beloved horse might drop from twisted gut. Keep the gate shut. Bury the dead. Even the buzzard with the broken wing.
Sometimes Gail Bartlett, a poet, doesn't know what she's done until she's done it. And did you know that you're known as the poet of acceptance? Honoring everything, even a dead buzzard. It is true. So this is from your debut book. And tell us what the title is, and if you can just sum it up, what is the book about?
Okay, the book is called, the title is Shepherd of the Lithosphere. The book is covering a range of poetry and emotions from family history, family connections, regional, the area where I grew up, and children, being a mother, being a grandmother. Those and are the themes, history and legacy.
You are our historian for sure, and a bucolic poet. But I was wondering about the title. The poem is so open, inviting, helping, welcoming. Why the title Shut the Gate?
This poem is, I think, if a delivery person or a propane person truck was coming, or a farmer with a truck, I would say, would you please close the gate when you leave? Of course, I would say that.
I love that. Now, I'm so glad I asked, because you are such a farmer. We have to get that in there. You are such a farmer. You are made from the land, girl. Well, we're going to go now to Jan Booth, who's also premiering her new volume. And a poem from that book is going to tell us who she is by what she says. Here's Jan Booth.
Good morning, Grace. Thank you for including me with Gail and this interview. I really appreciate it. My first chapbook is titled What Remains. Mm-hmm. And if I just might add, my husband is a painter, and the cover of the book is one of his landscape paintings. I'm very proud of his work. My book is a collection, as is Gail's, of personal poems that reflect, at this point in my life, I have been through many years and many experiences, and I look at time as a very precious and fluid thing. And so many of my poems, I think about what time means to me and how it impacts my life.
Well, let's hear it.
Okay. My first poem is titled, and I did change the poem that I was going to read. In this time of difficulty in our country, I felt, and I have received several messages from friends and family who have my book, saying how much this poem helped them now. It's titled Confronting Despair. Look out the window. Better yet, step out into the day. Begin with the gnarled maple. Look where the wind tore that big limb from the trunk. See how the bark has grown over the scar, thick and buckled. The maple stands, but lopsided now. Look up. the gray squirrel's precarious nest, rebuilt after a storm's destruction, suspended again on flexing boughs. A new scurry of squirrels nestles now in dead leaves. Look down. Beneath the nest and maple, English ivy in profusion, loved and loathed by gardeners, making slow, indomitable progress, pursuing sunlight, spreading, clasping, surmounting, undeterred by the gardener's shears or dark shadows. Bend a knee. Look closely now under the ivy, plump earthworm and spindly ant, hard at work for their colonies, gathering food, restoring tunnels, digesting death, and rendering life.
Oh, Jan, this is called Confronting Despair, and it is beautiful. You know, you don't describe nature, you bring nature to life, and that is what you do. And the way you do it is with consonants. Figure, go figure. A scurry of squirrels nestles in dead leaves. S. That is what brings this poem together, your consonants. And so you know you are a nature poet, but that's not just looking at it. That is restoring it on the page. So is this what we can expect from your new book? And what's the title?
Yes, absolutely. What remains, certainly nature, is what remains when all else fails us.
So is that really, I never really knew that that's what you meant. I thought it had
It has to do, the title comes from my concern with time and
of course
our lives and how at the end or as time goes on, how what stays with us and what stays with those we love or those we touch. That's what's important, what remains behind.
I remember now that time is a big character in your play throughout the book.
Yes.
And we have two poets, Jan Booth and Gail Bartlett, and Gail's back with another poem from her new book. And I'm going to give you her resume, which is like three pages, and she gave me three lines. So Gail Bartlett's poems have been in Baltimoreology, Photo Specchio, The Road Beneath Our Feet, the Antioch Poetry Retreat Anthology, Speaking for Everyone, an Anthology of We Poems. Then this new book, Shepherd of the Lithosphere, is just out, 2026. Gail is a graduate of Towson University, and she divides her time between a farm in West Virginia and her home in Baltimore, Maryland. What she did not say, what I do know, is that she's had a celebrated life in letters, was a children's librarian, and so much more. But right now, she's our poet. So give us another poem, please. Gail Bartlett.
This poem occurred years after I had a particular lucid dream, soon after my father had passed away. But the poem, the dream stayed in my mind and then became a poem at a poetry retreat a few years ago. It's called A Closed Herd, An Open Sky. Lifting from the back porch stairs to the sky, I fly weightless with a breath of joy. Gliding over grass and thistles, clearing the barn road fence and up into the mist. Rising above the clover to sight the north ridge, I feel how effortless it is to stay afloat. But I must keep flying forward or gravity will pull me down. Holsteins graze on pasture. Soaring beyond my path, I hear the cry of the red-tailed hawk's warning screech, demanding that I bank to the left and turn my attention to the cropland, the open, rolling green fields. Glancing toward the old orchard, I swoop low for a closer look. 24 yellow townhouses stand, fumes of fresh paint, where apple trees stood. I am soaring with the red-tailed hawk to home.
Mm.
Landing lightly, I walk up the old stone steps to the porch. There is work to do, years of work to save this farm. I wake and put my feet down. No townhouse will ever stand there.
Mm-hmm.
Beneath an open sky, the red-tailed hawk hunts. The closed herd thrives with healthy calves. The fences hold. The fields produce feed for them. 140 apple trees stand.
Just ending with that one determined word, Gail, this is really a pleasure to hear, starting from weightlessness and then landing lightly. But what passion! You are so stubborn. From flight to reality, listen to this. There is work to do, years of work to save this farm. I wake and put my feet down. No townhouse will ever stand here. That is absolute passion. I do have to say that I wish everyone could see everything I'm looking at, because we have a perfect poem with four line quatrains in perfect stanzas that are very crisp and very clean, which makes us think, you know, we're very much in some is in control of this poem. We can trust the reader. And it's just, I think it's one of your best. Do you like it?
I love it. I love it. That's why I wanted to read it today. I love the idea that it takes a long, long time to plan, to keep a farm running. It all looks the same from day to day, but yet there's the cycles and the continuity, and this poem is about regeneration.
It is, and it's about you. It doesn't happen without you. I know the tenacity you have about your farm, and it is something very difficult for me to understand coming from a city.
Well, this plays into Jan's theme of what remains, regeneration, stagnation, or regeneration. And sometimes you must choose regeneration. When my father had passed away, it's easy to go and visit your parents and say, I'll paint a fence. I'll help with this. I'll fix the porch. And then when your number is up, when you're at the top of that hill, that mountain, and you're responsible, it becomes very different.
That is beautifully said and very moving. And I think we can all relate to it no matter where we come from. Yes. So that was a poem from her new book. And Jan is going to go back to her poetry with us. She's from Michigan, and she's going to prove it to you.
Thank you, Grace. Yes, this poem, as Grace points out, I'm from Michigan originally and grew up there. My family is mostly farm folks, and the poem I'm going to read, titled Michigan Morning, sort of reflects my childhood youthful experiences to some degree. Michigan Morning. On the oak table, a bowl of crazed and chipped holds ripe green mango and orange persimmon. Sunlight streams through the blinds, casting shadows. Bars across the fruit, do not touch. An aberration. Beyond the table, the fruit and the window, Papa grimaces as he drags a full water bucket from a fissure in the rocks beneath the cliff. Beyond the cottage and the cliff, a loon calls, a fox barks. The earth breathes, inhales and exhales the crispness. Morning in Michigan.
I am there. I am there.
Me too.
Let us count the senses in that poem. The sights, the sounds, very hard to get in poetry, the colors, the detail. I am there. I am there. What would the world do without poets? We wouldn't smell, taste, or see anything. I'm not kidding. Do you know what you're doing, Jan?
Well, you know, that's interesting that you said that, because it reminds me of, I walk every morning, except recent with the storm, but I run into the same people, and some of them have gotten my book or read my poems, and one woman that I like very much, we pass in the morning, and she recently said, you know, after reading some of your poems, I'm just looking at the world more than I did before. And I think, oh, who could ask for more as a poet, you know, than to have that
Jan, just shoot me now. And I'm happy. That is the whole thing. That is, and she probably never read poetry very much.
I don't know. We haven't discussed it at length, but she does comment on my poems that makes
but
me
if
very
the poet
happy.
Can teach anyone to stop and notice things, this demonstrates that lesson. You can't persuade people to do it, but if you show them like this, that is awesome to the max. Awesome. And since we have you here on the griddle, we'll hear another poem from you.
Okay. Speaking of my walks and living in Annapolis, those of you who know Annapolis know that there are lots of little creeks with bridges over them. And one of my morning walks led me to write this poem titled Crossing the Bridge Again. Mm. January feel to the morning, cold wind over the water, bright sun, crackling dead leaves. And yet the two-note titmouse sings, puffed and preening on her bough, and still I lift my head and smile at lusty grackle's raspy calls. Below, the water roils and buckles, churned and plowed by nature and by man. Look down, I watch the muck roll up, burying the grass that grasps the fragile shore. A plastic bag ghosts just below the surface. And yet, the graceful heron thrusts her spear-like beak, fishing amongst the garbage and the mud.
When you wrote this poem entitled it Crossing the Bridge Again, were you using the word again because you had two points of view about the bridge?
Because I came to see the sadder part over time. I've lived over 40 years in Annapolis, and it seemed early on the creeks were clear and the birds could enjoy, and I could enjoy nature with fewer sad moments. And this crossing reminded me of the suffering that we as human beings cause to nature.
Yes, you do humanize our lives with nature instead of the other way around. Humanize nature with our lives as well. Two points of view here, going over and seeing the beautiful things and then going over again and seeing what has happened. What did you mean by the words yet and still? Read those four lines.
Okay.
And yet, in the first stanza.
And yet the two-note titmouse sings, puffed and preening on her bough, and still I lift my head and smile at lusty grackle's raspy calls.
So tell me why yet and still. Is it because, okay, go ahead.
Well, because it's a cold, crisp morning and birds have to bundle up as I did. And even though the sun is shining, the wind is blowing, the water's cold, but it doesn't stop the titmouse and it doesn't stop the crackles.
Good. Jan is a writer and an educator. What Remains is Jan's poetry chapbook, and her poetry is included in three anthologies, Still Singing, Six Women Poets, The Song in the Room, Six Women Poets. Again, those six are pretty productive. The Antioch Poetry Review, A Gathering of Poets, The Road Beneath Our Feet, and various periodicals. She has a long-running garden column and is the author of Crofton, Images of America. She has her graduate degree from Wayne State University in Detroit, Michigan, has taught at universities, community colleges, high schools for 50 years, and lives with us in Annapolis. Thank you very much, Jan. So since you have told us about nature, if we read your book, Do we know more about you through nature? Or do we know more about what?
I hope. Well, it would be lovely if you finished the book and felt you knew me a little better. That's lovely. But hopefully what my heart hopes is that reading the poems expands or deepens each of our understanding of what nature and time, how precious they are, and what they do for us always, whether we recognize it or honor it or not, that nature keeps giving us another chance and time keeps moving us along.
That's your job. That's the poet's job. Everybody has a job to do. Gail is our portrait poet. And here's a poem from Gail's new book.
The last thing on earth we planned. We planned the Medea cast party when you were 20, and the Thanksgiving dinners. You rearranged furniture. On Christmas Eve, we attended midnight mass at the Cathedral of Mary Our Queen, the two of us. After the egg hunts, early church, and Easter cakes, we planned Jeanette's baby shower long distance. You planned your second son's birth for December, winter break from medical school, and you were exhausted. Then back to cardiology in January. I was there, singing to my grandson in the early morning rain. We love to make pros and cons lists, two visual learners, discussing, comparing your choices for college or career. Two phones and two laptops working last April, simply filling out pages of paperwork, doctors, treatment dates, necessary. Almost the last thing on earth we planned. The church service in December, the gathering of family and friends, lunch at the farm with flowers on the tables. Never on earth did we plan that.
This is a portrait of a relationship, but using the calendar months is so crafty, just such a good thing, because it is a power poem which breaks the heart, but the way you structure it so that we keep following it through the calendar months is really, really brilliant. And the couplets that hold the tension so tight inside two lines. Tell us about how you manage to get through that poem on the page.
That poem is a tribute. It's an honor for my daughter, Alicia, and her passing. And as a mother, and we had a very close mother-daughter relationship, not to say that we didn't sometimes butt heads, because she's just as stubborn as I am. But I tried to follow my intuition. And of course, you know, I love couplets and I love to write in couplets. And the title, it was a few months, I think, after Alicia died in 2021, I kept thinking, we didn't plan that. We plan all kinds of things, planners, but we didn't plan that. So I had the title, The Last Thing on Earth We Planned, and I let the poem lead me. When I finally sat down to write it, I guess I was trying, you know, still communicating quite a bit with Alicia, with her spirit and her, because we spoke or texted almost every day. And I kept thinking these little ideas. Like, I hadn't thought about the Medea cast party for years. I had thought about my grandson, of course, and her illness, but I just kind of felt like she was with me as I wrote it, to kind of get the right things to say, because she was 49 years old. I could have come up with hundreds of things we planned, vacations and whatnot.
That's interesting. These are crystals. Yeah, but you know she helped you write it. You know she's listening.
I did feel that she did write
it.
Well,
we're dedicating this poem to her. What is her name?
Alicia.
She's here. She is here. But craft will carry you over the waters. Craft will do it. Just the way you gave us something to hang on to, a lifeline. You know, if I felt like, what are those things people go across canyons on, swinging on those ropes? What is that called?
The zip line?
Or? Yes, that's your zip line, the calendar. And that's what keeps you managing to go to the next month, to the next stanza, to the next thought, to the next feeling. And I say that poets who memorialize make death beautiful. And I thank you for that. And while we have you on the griddle, let's have another poem.
Carrying the clothes. It wasn't hard to carry the clothes out of the small cabin to the car, say goodbye, and drive to Baltimore. After crossing the mountain, the clothes rested for 2 days in their fleecy warmth and silky smooth memories of living on you as you flew up the subway stairs, smiling. Keep up, Mom. I'm trying to keep up. I'm right behind you, carrying the clothes home.
There's not a sweeter poem, a simpler poem, or a better poem than that about relationships, about
some
life.
Some of mine are quite short, and I'm okay with that.
I'm more than okay with that prize-winning poem. And just the mystery of the poem, using clothes as representing a life, then the clothes, where who they were on, where they were, and then the last two lines. I'm trying to keep up. I'm right behind you, carrying the clothes home. And I love the center in their fleecy warmth and silky. Mm-hmm. We know what kind of a person she was by mm-hmm. that. That's a just love the way you use clothes representing a person. That is.
Thank you, Grace.
Are you pleased with it?
Yes. I like to leave a little space. Well, I needed to write it, and I did write it. And I did leave the clothes in the car, and then wait for the rain to pass. And then I think I wrote this after I brought them all in. That was something I needed to do, was bring everything home. So she had a husband, but it was my job to do that. And I like to leave some mystery. I like to leave some space for the reader to read in their own thoughts, their own experiences. And I try to do that in a lot of my work.
You know what confounds me? That in the heart of broken misery and loss, your mind still knows how to make something. If that is not redemption, I do not know what is. If that is not holy, I don't know what's holy. That in the heart of pain, you can make something.
Well,
Thank you.
It saves you to make something.
She's permanent. She'll live longer than we will, Gail. This poem, she will live longer than we will. What a thing you've done.
Who
what
will find thing. Our book in the future, and a poem will speak to them.
I have not lost a daughter, and I've gone through your grief with this poem. So you make us one. Unity is what the poet does in the world. It unifies where everything else breaking apart, the poet unifies. And so does Jan Booth, who's back and here with a poem, who will also unify.
Well, following on the topic of loss and life going on, this poem reflects my interest in nature and in the aging process and what remains when we are gone. It's titled Eventide. Beside the lake's wooded shore, a birch bark canoe lies rotting, collapsing as if crushed by a careless giant. How long ago was this decaying vessel a pliant birch? White bark, green leaves reaching toward the heavens? How long ago did this trunk glide freely across this sheltered lake? In time, my eyes adjust. I see more clearly now in eventide's half-light. Within and beneath the rotting log canoe, millions of spores bloom, orange, pink, gold, and violet. Mushrooms lift their plump marbled caps from the old log toward the dappled light and rise.
Poet of transformation, poet of regeneration. When I was a young poet, I'm a very old now, but when I was young, I remember someone saying, use an object in a poem, because an object has vibration, it has a history, it has a past, it has a story. So, your canoe. How did you know to do that?
Well, again, I'm from Michigan, and I have a dear friend who spends her summers up in northern Michigan. She was just telling me about a canoe ride, a trip that she had made. And I put that with a trip I'd made in Maine and walking among the lakes and finding actually these mushrooms, just gorgeous bouquets of these multicolored, multi-shaped mushrooms. And somehow, as things do, they kind of came together in this poem.
Talk about noticing, right?
Yes.
Talk about noticing. I've got to get out of the house. I really have got to go see a canoe somewhere. I mean, I really am from Trenton, and I want to see a mushroom big time. I do. Gail, when we hear the next poem, I'm going to know why you chose it as the title poem. So let's hear it and let's tell.
Well, I hope so, and I might have to add a bit to it. Okay. Shepherd of the lithosphere. How quietly our love went underground, ignoring the cricket's song in the undercurrent of the lost creek. Pinnacles of seaweed surprise the emerald fish with an arrow of darkness as they pass through the seldom found door, turning them as white and colorless as the feathers of snow covering their winter shadow. No shadows, no permission for the former light they knew.
Gail, you are so good. No color in that but one emerald fish. No color in that poem but one is all white and wintry. Oh my. Yes, it's like Picasso's blue period with just one stripe of red. Did you know you did that?
Not until I found the poem and read it again. I hadn't realized.
White and colorless, but for that emerald fish. Yeah. Well, let's talk about your word choice then, because that's diction. Diction makes tone. So what is the tone of this poem?
I think there is a lot of mystery here, and I think there are secrets. Through the seldom found door, the fish have to find their way in and out in an underground cave. So when I chose the title Lithosphere, and this the title poem and the title of the book, I grew up in an area of limestone and karst, what we call formation. I'm not a geologist, although I have friends who are. It's under the part of West Virginia where the farm is, and the part of Virginia where my father worked and we went to school. We have extensive cave systems, and they create ideal pasture land for cattle. They create rich soil, wonderful farms, wonderful pastures, but they're full of caves, sinking water, hidden caves, hidden creeks, hidden running streams. And so everyone's always concerned about the water table, the pond, the cattle trough, that comes from the well level. Everything rides on this beautiful geology. And to me, it's the lithosphere, the outer shell around the outer hard shell around the earth that will bend, will break, will buckle under pressure, as we have the mountains of West Virginia and Virginia. the Blue Ridge and the Allegheny. So to me, it's just a very mysterious place where I grew up, in the woods and the land.
That is a contribution, because what the word lithosphere can do is many things. I mean, I saw it as an embodiment of spirit in poetry, and poetry being the crust over spirit. But now that we know the real way that it entered your mind, it's twice as interesting. It came from real life, right?
It did. We have sinkholes, lots of sinkholes, lots of lime outcroppings. But these fish, they really do lose their color when they go in this underground cave from Spring Creek.
I know a caver, and I'm going to ask him if this is true.
Okay.
Thank you. Gail, you know everything.
I might just be making this all up.
Well, if you do, you got a damn good poem out of it. That is great. And so we have another one from Janie.
Thank you, Grace. This poem, the form of it was inspired by a poem I read by Lucille Clifton. And the focus of it was inspired by a poem of Grace Cavalieri's called Work is My Secret Lover.
Mm-hmm.
Mine is titled, Work is the Beat of My Heart. Work is the plump brown hen peeking patiently, pecking patiently in the barnyard. Is the sleek red vixen adventurous, clever, self-sufficient? Work is the glowing peacock feather, fine and fabulous, treasured. Is the blood through my veins? Is the breath in my lungs dispersing grief? Cleansing.
No better way to tell the writing process, no better way. And just listen to you again, showing off with your consonants, plump, pecking, patiently, sleek, self-sufficient, fine, fabulous, blood, breath. What a show-off you are. We would love to have a final poem from each of you, but I tell you, I'd like to have the names of your books read again, if you'll say them loudly, so people can get them. They're available, I'm sure, on Amazon, and they are truly a contribution to poetry. What are the titles again? Gail.
Bird of the Lithosphere.
Jan.
Mine is What Remains.
You can get it here. You can. And now a final poem. Let's start with Gail.
Notes from Madison for Thomas Saunders. You drop me off at the hospital each morning. Beer at the Union later, and I walk down the aisle of the music department, listening to the sounds of a clarinet and a past left behind. Evenings, I watch police throw tear gas on campus from a hill above the mayhem, losing breath to tears. Thrown your way, but you assure me you are safe, documenting the action from the smoke among friends.
Gail Bartlett, and now Jan Booth.
The Outskirts of Feeling, this poem is a triolet, which is a French form, very short, tight rhymes. The Outskirts of Feeling. It's taken a lifetime for me to know the sound of a wild heart in repose, the colors of joy in a far meadow. I still exist when I let go and chase both light and shadow. It's taken a lifetime for me to know the sound of a wild heart in repose.
Jan Booth and Gail Bartlett. The program is A Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress, produced by Forest Woods Media Production, post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We want to thank our funders, who are Natalie Canavore, Avideh Shoshani, Young Ki Kim Renaud, and Sandy Jackson Cohen. Mike Turpin's our engineer, and I'm Grace Cavalieri.